Okay, good morning. My name is Thomas Hood, and I'm married to my beautiful wife, Jennifer Hood. And I really want to thank the elders and Steve for this opportunity that I get to speak about God and money. And that's one of the passions. For anybody that knows me, I love music, and I love to help people with their finances. So, I want to give a disclaimer. If I say some things that offend you, or step on your toes, or rub you the wrong way, if I'm wrong, please come and tell me. I want to preach what's correct and right. I only want to say what's useful, helpful to the congregation. So please let me know. If it's a matter of opinion, we'll talk about it. But if it's wrong from the Bible, please let me know. Okay. I wanted to give a little bit of background. I introduced my wife earlier. We've been married for 34 years. We jokingly say we've been happily married for 31 years. It was during the first few years. I mean, the first year is great. Everybody, you know, but we were not disciples at the time, and things started. There was starting to be tension between us. We were married for 5 years when we became disciples. So since then, it's been going great. But the first few years might have been a little bit rocky there. We've been leading the Financial Peace University class for about 10 years. Our first class was in the fall of 2008. Is there anybody here that was in that class? Lisa was. Were you guys in? Not in that one, not in the first one. The first class, we met at the Christian church, and I thought, this is great. We'll go in, and they'll have everything ready for us. They did not. I came in. I had to bring my own television and DVD player. And but we did that. We got through it. Like I said, we've been doing that for about 10 years. We do a class every spring and every fall. I think we've missed one or two seasons that we did not do it. But otherwise, we've been doing that for 10 years. In 2014, Jennifer and I took a Financial Coach Master Series training class. So we are trained as financial coaches, which I'll talk about that a little bit later. For about 4 years now, I've been helping Peter Berry with the benevolence program. Anytime anybody makes a benevolence request, they email Peter and me. We look at it, we look at the need, and we make a decision on that. A lot of times, when people need benevolence, we also give them some training too. We help them with their budgets. We don't just throw some money out, here's some money to meet the need. We want to train people how to use it. I've been a deacon for 3 years now. And that's also with doing the benevolence and teaching the Financial Peace University class. When Jennifer and I got married, I was saying the first few years were a little rocky. Actually, for the first 21 years, we just had a normal marriage, just like everybody else. We were normal. We didn't really keep up with our finances. I remember many times we'd be at church, and at the spur of the moment after church, a group of people say, "Hey, let's all go out to eat." I knew that we did not have the money to do that. But we did. We just went along with the crowd, put it on a credit card. So we that was our life for about 21 years. And then by this time, I had a young son. He was in fifth grade. We were encouraged to move to a ministry that had a more of a children's ministry. So we moved to Roswell. Roswell Ministry. We bought a house in Alpharetta. And We bought it with the guidelines. We pre-qualified for the mortgage. We thought, we can afford this. And we were struggling. We were really struggling to make the payments. One of the things that, and I'll talk about this in another lesson, but when you buy a house, when you pre-qualify for a mortgage, they base that on about 35% of your take-home pay. We don't, when we counsel people, coach people, we say don't buy a house that's 35% of your take-home pay. Like at most 25%. And that on a 15-year mortgage. Anyway, that point aside, we were struggling. We were really struggling to make our payments. We didn't have any extra money for anything. And about this time, my son, skip forward a few years. My son was a freshman in high school, finished his freshman year, went to the swamp, to camp. And he said, getting a little emotional. He came home and he said, Dad, I'd really like to start studying the Bible. I said, that's great. And he said, well, I know that there's a group of teens over in Gwinnett. So we're living in Roswell, in Alpharetta, actually. And he wants to go to this teen group in Gwinnett. So we drove him. They met on Thursday nights. We met on Wednesday nights for our midweek. So that's okay. So we drove him over here a couple of times. And after the second time, he said, Dad, why don't we just move to Gwinnett? So about the same time, I'm at church one Sunday. The preacher preaches this message about biblical finance. And a friend of mine comes up to me after service, and he says, well, how are you guys doing with your finances? And I said, we're doing fine. We're good. We're good. He said, well, I've got this book I want you to read. Those of you that know me, I am not that much of a reader. My wife loves to read. So I said, okay, I'll take this book. I took it home to Jennifer. I said, here, read this. It was Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover. So she read the book. I got the audio book. Okay. And we immediately started doing that plan. At the time, when we figured up how much debt we had, we were in $26,000 of just credit card debt. We didn't have car payments. We didn't have student loans. This was all credit card. So we started doing this plan. We found a Financial Peace University class. We did move to Gwinnett, obviously. We've been here for about, 12 years? At the time, when I was $26,000 in debt, I was 47 years old, almost 48. So we set a goal. I said, by 50, I want to be out of debt. I'm talking just that. I'm not talking about the house, okay? I'm talking about everything except for the house. But I said, by 50, we're going to be out of debt. And we did. We cut our lifestyle. We cut going out to eat. We cut the cable. I cut up credit cards. I cut up all my credit cards. Anyway, we moved to Gwinnett. We bought a house there so that my son could go to the same school that Art went to. We were desperately looking for a house that would feed into the same school where Art went. And in the meantime, my son off and on studied the Bible. A couple of years later, he did get baptized. He's doing awesome now. He's in. He's married. He's in Cincinnati. And so here we are. God and Money Part 2. That was just the intro. Okay, first point I want to make is put God first. So what does that mean, putting God first? What does it mean? Tithe. Okay, that's one thing. Anybody else? What? Money? With your money. Honor God with your money. Darius? Yes. I see Becky. Okay. Bill. Right. It's your whole lifestyle. Not just your money, but in every aspect of your life. Yes. God owns it all. Does God need our money? No. What does He need from us? Our hearts, exactly. So if God owns it all, what does that make us? Stewards? Managers? The steward. What does the word steward mean? We don't use that word a lot today. If somebody says steward, what does that mean? But caretaker. Huh? CEO. Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. But the manager. Okay, I said manager. So God makes us managers of the money and everything that we have. So next. Psalm 24:1 says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all its people belong to Him." So we belong to Him, the earth belongs to Him, everything belongs to Him. So when I was asking about what it means to put God first, somebody said tithe. Somebody said tithe. Oh, that's not lined up. Can't see it. It says on the first day of the week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with his income, saving it up so that when I come, no collection will have to be made. So what about the tithe? Where did the tithe come from? Old Testament, okay. Abraham and Melchizedek, okay. So Abraham, so there was this guy Melchizedek. Nobody knows where he actually came from, but Abraham gave a tenth, right? Basically. So do we do the tithe in the New Testament church? I mean, okay, we're not legalistically bound to the tithe, but it is a great place to start. Okay, any more comments on that about tithing in the New Testament? What do you think, Alan? Say it again. Ah. Okay, if they were followers of God before Christ and they were giving 10%, they probably continued to give at least 10%. Good point. I have a question. How many people do you think, or what percentage of people do you think tithe? Anybody? Okay, in the U.S., I'm talking about, I did a little bit of research about the U.S., about the United States. So how many people of the United States would you say tithe? 10%? Elaine, what? 4%? Any other guess? Jeff? Okay, I did a little bit of quick research, okay? This is through Google, okay? So you know it's got to be true. It says 40% of Americans identify themselves as Christians, okay? 40% say they're Christians. Okay, about 20% of Americans regularly attend church. And they define this regularly as at least 12 times a year. Okay, so if you go to church once a month, then you're in this number of the 20% of Americans. Okay, of those 20% that attend, it says about 25% of those give regularly. I don't know exactly what that, I don't have a definition on that. Then it says, and I guess we're going back to all of the Americans, about 3 to 5% of people actually give a tithe or a 10%. 3 to 5%. So, I got a question. What are some of the reasons that people don't tithe? John? Ah, he said because it's the last item on their budget. That's a very good point. When we counsel people, when we coach people about doing a budget, you put your giving at the top. If you don't put it at the top, there's always going to be something come up that's going to seem like it's more important or more immediate. Like you got to put out the fire. You know, this happened. My car broke down. You know, whatever. Something's going to come up. Any other reasons? Steve? Yeah, if you're not putting God first, okay. Okay, do you have your hand up, Tim? No? Okay. Right. When you see all this stuff going on, you're skeptical. You see a pastor that owns his own jet, private jet, you know. Dan. Yeah. A loss of a job, you have unexpected medical things come up. Okay. Jennifer?
I don't think a lot of people are opposed to it necessarily. It suggests that it has taught or trained how to do it, how to make it happen.
Okay. Joe, who, Jackie? Say it again. We don't have any control. You know, are you saying it when you give it to the church or whatever, you don't know how it's being used? Okay, that's a fundamental problem there. If you're going somewhere to church and you don't know how they're using the money or you don't agree with how they're using the money, you might not. Maybe you shouldn't be going there. Okay. Debt. Ah, debt. Is debt a problem or is debt a symptom? If I get another chance to speak, if they invite me to come back again, I'm going to talk more about debt. This may be it. This may be the last time that I get the microphone. But I'm going to talk more about debt in another lesson. Okay. Well, Peter says I can, so... Okay. Any other thoughts on why we don't tithe? Steve? Greed. Okay, we want to spend it on us instead of giving it to God. Okay. I think a lot of, in my first 21 years of my marriage, that was a lot of our problems. I was making probably a little bit more than the average household income in the United States, but we were spending. We were spending. Every time I got a raise, we just spent that much more. More than the raise. And then we had nothing to show for it, basically. But greed is a big problem. Okay. My point number two, you've got to do a budget. It's like, uh-oh, he said the B word. He's cussing in church. What is a budget? What is a budget? What does that mean? When you hear the word budget, what does that mean? What are some of the first things you think of? Michelle. How you're going to allocate your money. Okay. Yeah. A plan. Okay, Nancy. I think a lot of people, when they hear budget, they think limitations. They think, I can't do this. I can't do what I want. I can't have this. I can't go there. Peter. Let's see. Plan ahead. You ever see this slide before or something like that? When it gets down to the end of it and we did not have enough room, enough money to finish what we were doing. But a budget is just a plan, having a plan for your money. Got some scriptures about planning. Luke 14:28-30. For which one of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, he will lay a foundation and is not able to... Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who observe it begin to ridicule him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Proverbs 27:23. Know the state of your flocks and put your heart into caring for your herds. Let me, a side note here. The book of Proverbs, wisdom. There is so much in the book of Proverbs about money. There's actually, if you look at the whole Bible, there's actually more Bible verses about money than there is about love. So, I think God thinks it's pretty important how we use our money. But read the book of Proverbs. Like a lot of people like to read one proverb every day and take special note of the verses that talk about money. There's a lot of them in there. If you do that, you will have a master's degree in finance. Proverbs 21:5. The plans of the diligent lead surely to advantage, but everyone who is hasty comes surely to his poverty. Okay, you've got to live on less than you make. The only people who can spend more than they make is the government. I mean, we have to make our budget balance. We can't just raise our debt ceiling. We can't do that. We've got to balance our own budget. So what does it mean to make a budget? How do you make a budget? Anybody? Okay, you mentioned something there, spreadsheet. I got to say something at this point. I work with Peter with Benevolence Program. Peter is a spreadsheet kind of guy. I am not. I do not do spreadsheets. I don't get along with spreadsheets. I'm a big picture kind of guy. I can look at the big picture and say, okay, here's the problem, but I don't do spreadsheets. Okay. Jason. Okay, you're getting ahead of me. Next week, Jason is going to teach the class. No, thank you. Somebody else have? Oh, Dan, you have your hand up. Yes. Right. Okay, that's a very good point. And I had something about that. Some people will say, I've got an app that tracks my spending. I know exactly what I have spent. Is that budgeting? Okay, when you're driving a car, you've got a rearview mirror and you've got a windshield. You're driving in traffic. Which one is more important for you to look at? Okay, you need to know where you're going. You know, not just where you've been. It's good that you know you track your spending. That is good. It's a good basis to start. You need to know what you're currently spending in order to, I'll be sidetracked a little bit. Sometimes early in our budgeting, this happened. Now Jennifer and I have been doing this for like 13 years, and we meet together every 2 weeks. We have our budget committee meeting. We've been doing it so long that it's very short meeting now. We know what we're doing. We agree with each other. We're on the same page. But we know what we're doing. But early on, she may have said, well, we need X amount of money for groceries. And I might have said, well, I think we can get by with this much. But she knows. She's the one that does the shopping. So knowing what you spend, you have to start with that. Let's see. I said this, it's not just tracking your spending. You got to plan ahead. Oh, Jennifer.
I was going to say that if you're living within your means and you're saving and you're tithing, any kind of budget is okay. There's not a definite right way to do it.
Right, exactly. Right. Do I have to? I have to 11, don't I? I'm running out of time. I have a lot to say and just a little bit of time to say it. But a budget is my screen's going out. A budget is not just a theory. Some people say, well, I made a budget one time back, 10 years ago, I made it, and it didn't work. Okay, budget, every month is different. What is it that happens in December, toward the end of December? Christmas, you got a budget for Christmas. What about, who in here has kids between the ages of 9 and 18? Okay, What happens in the summer? They grow. I'm talking about the swamp. You want your kids to go to the swamp, you need to budget for that. You need to start setting aside, you know it's going to be X amount of money to go to the swamp. So if you take that amount, divide it by 12, put that much aside every month, when it comes up, you've got the money to do it, right? Peter says amen. We don't have my slides. Okay, that's all right. Well, something I've got here, that statistics I found was that 76% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. So what exactly does that mean, living paycheck to paycheck? What do you think it means? Art says if you don't get paid, you're in trouble. You know, your rent comes up or your mortgage payment, you can't make your payment. Whatever. Let's see, Zach, did you have your hand? Yeah, we just changed, the names are changed to protect the innocent. Money comes in, money goes out. Yes. Ah, that's another point I'm going to make in another lesson. You have to have some money set aside for emergencies. Emergencies are unexpected things that you can't plan on. What about it's Friday and the pizza man's delivering? Is that an emergency? Well, no. Okay. but we have... Somebody said something earlier about catastrophic medical conditions happening. You know, things happen, but you've got to plan on emergencies. Even though we don't know what they're going to be, you have to have some money set aside for emergencies. Anyway, that's a side point. I've got a slide. Imagine the slide that says needs versus wants. Okay. In talking about budgeting, needs versus wants, what are the needs that we have? What are needs? Food, shelter, transportation, clothing. So is that about it? The needs that we have, food, shelter, transportation, clothing. Healthcare, okay, well that's in there, yeah. We call that our four walls. When we're doing our coaching, we talk about the four walls. You have to have these four walls before anything else. What if, let's see, you don't have your rent, but your visa is, they're calling you, telling you you're behind on your visa. You got to pay your visa, right? What are your four walls again? Your food, clothing, shelter, transportation. In the shelter, I would also include your utilities, your electric bill, your cable bill. Oh, wait a minute. No, you got to have cable. Uh-oh. You don't have to have 230 channels? Ah. Okay, so we established what are needs versus wants. What are some of the wants? Cable, okay. I gotta get this iPhone 10 when it comes out. I've got to have it. Is that a need or a want? Okay, is it always wrong to get some things that you want? Michelle says, if you save up for it, okay. Okay, you pay cash. What else? Ah, if your wife agrees. I'm running out of time. I love musical instruments. I love to learn a different instrument. And I have about one of everything. And so a new musical instrument is a want, it's not a need, okay? If your wife agrees, she buys me a lot of these musical instruments anyway. Okay. Let me go on. I have a slide that says Proverbs 22:7, the borrower is slave to the lender. So, what does that mean? The borrower is slave to the lender. Steve? Who has their Bible or their Bible app open to that verse? Somebody has it? Nobody. Alan, what is the verse right before Proverbs 22:7? What does it say? Oh. Why did God put those two verses together? Train up a child in the way it should go, and when he's old, he will not depart. And the next verse says, the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. I am back. Let me see here. I said that already. Needs versus wants. I said that already. The borrower is slave to the lender. Let's see where I am. I'm running out of time. I'm sorry. I got to go to my next point. You've got to work together. And I'm talking to married couples. Married couples, you have to be on the same page. Singles, you have to. It's a really good idea to have an accountability partner with your budget. Have somebody who loves you enough to say no. You don't need that. You don't need to buy a new ukulele. You don't need to buy that pair of shoes. You don't need to buy that dress, whatever. Have somebody that will love you enough to hurt your feelings and tell you no. Let me get back to married couples. You've got to work together. You've got to be on the same page. We've sat down with married couples, and one of them says, well, they're the one that does the budget. They're the one that pays all the bills. I don't have anything to do with it. What's wrong with that? Jennifer. Okay. So in a married couple, which one of the two should make the financial decisions? Both. Both. Okay. When you actually sit down to make the budget, who should make the budget? Both. In financial peace, and I'm not talking too much about the stuff we talk about in financial peace. But we talk about the concept of nerds and free spirits. I'm a free spirit. I don't do spreadsheets. Jennifer is the one that actually likes to sit down and write out the budget. I don't like that. I'm the one that comes to the meeting and I look it over and says, that looks pretty good. Or I'll make a slight adjustment. But both of you need to be agreed on this. Let's see, I'm running out of time. I got one more slide. Here's what happens when you're not on the same page. It says, according to a Citibank survey, 57% of divorced couples cited money problems as the primary reason for the demise of their marriage. So, I did some other research. Some of the studies say that the money problems is number one. Some say it's number two, but it's really high on the list. Don't raise your hand, but who in here has ever had a fight with your spouse over money problems? Don't raise your hand. No, don't raise your hand. Don't raise your hand. So anyway, it's very important for married couples to work together. And I've got a few scriptures here that I'm going to end it up. Proverbs 27:17 says, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. Ecclesiastes 4:9 says, two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. And that's what we want to do. We want to help each other succeed. Proverbs 15:22 says, plans go wrong for lack of advice. Many advisors bring success. Okay, in summary, I just said my point number one was we've got to put God first. Number two, we've got to do a budget. And number three, we've got to work together. I was going to try to leave some time for questions. I don't think I've got time for questions. I want to throw this out. Jennifer and I do financial coaching. We do it free of charge. We do it a lot of times with the people with benevolent needs, but we do it with anybody. We can sit down with anybody. If it's a married couple, we sit down together and work with a married couple. If it's the single women, Jennifer works with single women. If it's single men, I work with single men. So I can't answer all your questions at church, but if you want to, you know, get together with us, we would be glad. We'd be happy to sit down with you. You make an appointment, come to our house, or we'll come to your house. No, come to our house. We'll be glad to work with you. We'll sit down with you. We'll pray with you. We'll love you. We'll encourage you. That's what we want to do. We just want to help people succeed. So that's it. Go get your kids.